Our Denver Nuggets insider joining us via the Johnson Auto Plaza hotline. Follow him on Twitter at HP Basketball. Matt, thanks for joining us. Aaron Gordon reported the 4 years, $92 million player option for that fourth year in 2025 and 26. What's your initial thought on that?
It's an interesting one because I think if you ask me, is Aaron Gordon in a vacuum in the NBA worth $24 million? I think my answer is probably no, right? I think it's very easy to look at the, if you're a Nuggets fan and you're a casual Nuggets fan, you're just like, wait, 10 and 5 and he doesn't shoot threes well. Why? How's this guy making $24
million? Exactly.
A lot of it
exactly.
is based off of, one, what he provides. This is the difference between market value and investor value. So the Nuggets are the investors in this case. And the market value on Gordon might be lower, but if you get free agency next year, it just takes one team. Lonzo Ball, who is described as an off-ball playmaker, which that's crazy that's such a thing, but it's true. He's better as, like, not the primary ball handler and creating for others. He got $85 million this season from the Chicago Bulls. It takes one team. And so one team would mean that the Nuggets would lose him, and because they have Nikola Jokic on the max and Jamal Murray on the max,
yes,
and they're soon to have MPJ on the max,
yes,
that they would have no room to be able to retain Gordon or to be able to replace his production with another player. So their options were basically agree to an extension with Gordon or risk losing him entirely with no opportunity to make up that differential. Gordon's people had, I was told this before he was traded to the Nuggets, Gordon's people were expecting to ask for $25 million a year in free agency. That was going to be what their target was. And the fact that they got 24 from the Nuggets, there's no way you can look at this and say the Nuggets got a great deal. They didn't get good value. They didn't get a steal, like has been the case with some of the other signings that they've had through the years. But I do think they made what was necessary, and this was obviously a sign from not just the front office, but more importantly, from KSE and the Kroenkes, that they intend to spend for a championship contender. This takes them into the tax. They finally put their money where their mouth is. They're going to be paying a lot for this team that they feel can win a championship.
Do they, in your view, feel stronger about this team than they felt 10 to 12 years ago about another team or teams that for a while also exceeded the salary cap? At that point, you know the teams I'm talking about, the 09, 2010 teams who on occasion went over the allotted cap number and paid a tax penalty.
I think one of the differentials here is, one, the NBA is a lot more profitable now because of all of the strides they've made, both with the media deal, there's been revenue sharing agreements, the owners get a larger percentage of the BRI, and just the growth of the game internationally, especially under Adam Silver. Another important thing about this deal is that Gordon's percentage of the cap will go down. The cap was pretty stagnant, as I recall, at that time. It was making modest gains year over year, but it was pretty stable.
You're right.
In that time. And now, you know, depending on what the new media deal looks like with a reported $8 billion in talks, which I just can't get my brain around, you know, there's a chance that this winds up being significantly less of their cap and as a result gives them more room to get out of the luxury tax and, more importantly, the repeater. That's the bigger issue here. In the NBA, after three seasons in the tax, your price for every dollar you pay in luxury tax effectively doubles.
Yeah.
And it gets super expensive very quickly. And that's going to be another thing that they'll have to manage, but that's down the line. I would say I do think that I'm not necessarily sure that I can say that the Nuggets are more committed to this team for whatever reason. I think it's more that financially it's more feasible for them, even with an economic dip caused by a global pandemic and even after losing all of the money from not having a major cable provider deal in place. Even after that, I think that the KSE is doing is enough to where this seemed like the move to make.
Man, obviously this deal had to be done before an extension for Michael Porter Jr. gets done for the sort of the nature of the cap and how you roll into all sorts of different sort of rules and regulations. How close is a Porter Jr. deal expected to be? And presumably, is it for the max?
It's not done, and so as it not being done, I will say that there's always a chance that things can fall apart. If the, I will say that my understanding is it will be a max, is that it will be or very, very close to it, depending on the definition of the term, based off of like player options, kickers, etc. It'll be close to that. I'm understanding that it is down to those details are what's being negotiated still. There's optimism from what I hear on both sides that the deal will be done before the season begins. I don't want to say that I think it's, oh yeah, it's done. Like that any second now. I don't know that, but I can tell you that my expectation at this point is for it to get done before the start of the season. They intend to have the core four plus Barton locked in for the next two seasons and then extend Nikola Jokic and keep this core together until they come such time as they think that they need to make a move. They believe that this is the team that's going to bring a title to Denver.
They have clearly premier offensive players in most any offensive ranking metric. You could find Jokic, obviously, in the top 10. You'd probably find Porter in most of those metrics in the top 10. You might even find Barton among those who are healthy at the present time, which would exclude Jamal Murray. Do you believe that the Nuggets are correct in saying, okay, even without Murray, we have three very good, perhaps even exceptional offensive players that will allow us to continue to ride with Morris, Campazzo, and Rivers in the backcourt?
Yeah, I think so. I mean, I think a lot of this is that when you get, you know, the NBA regular season, and I've done a lot of work studying this, has evolved so much. It used to be like, well, the playoffs are a whole different animal. And now it's like, no, it's a whole different like species from in terms of the planet. Like, they're not comparable in any sense. It's not a different league of competition. It's an entirely different sport, basically. You can assess, this is why I'm not worried about the Nuggets in the regular season without Murray. You can basically game the regular season by beating up on the bad teams. If you beat the teams that are just worse than you on paper by consistently showing up and playing disciplined good basketball, you'll rack up 50 wins. Doesn't matter really how you do against the top teams, because those are often coin flips anyway. If you beat the middle teams and the teams worse than you, if you're a good team, you can get there. So you get to the playoffs, and the playoffs have become fundamentally about, do you have enough answers in your top seven players to solve the defensive problems in front of you? Not, are you good enough defensively? Because if it was, are you good enough defensively, we'd be celebrating the Utah Jazz as NBA champions. That's a great defense because of Rudy Gobert and how they play.
Yeah.
But they can't solve the problems they face in the playoffs. The Nuggets are the opposite, where it's like, if you look at them up and down, you go, not a lot of good defenders here, a lot of problems. But they have a really good ability to solve the defensive problems in front of them because of their versatility and Jokic and what they bring to the table. Gordon helps that a lot, especially in the West where there's so many offensive-centric teams. I think that helps them out in that regard. And I do think that this is part of the reason why they've invested in P.J. Dozier. I think there's a lot of belief that P.J. Dozier is going to continue to be a key part of the team, as if they need a bigger body in the backcourt, he's an option that they can go to.
We're talking with our Nuggets insider, Matt Moore, HP Basketball on Twitter, and at the Action Network. And let's go into that sort of depth. P.J. Dozier does look like he's, if he can stay healthy, primed for kind of a breakthrough season. Obviously, they added Bones Highland, one of the guys who might end up being a surprise of the draft. The early returns are very good. They swapped out Paul Millsap for Jeff Green, another veteran sort of versatile front court player. When you look at last year's roster and you look at this year's roster, compare and contrast the two. What's better? What's worse?
I mean, I think just right off the top, you got to say, you know, the backcourt is worse because they're missing Jamal Murray and they lost R.J. Hampton and Gary Harris. That's three good athletes, good defenders. Jamal was much better than advertised, even if he's not, you know, a plus defender every night. I think he was good enough to be considered good enough. So that's, I think, part of it. Monte Morris and Campazzo, as Sandy mentioned, I think those are question marks on the defensive end.
Yeah.
But I think their wing depth is better. Highland helps them a lot in this regard. Just having a guy that can get his own shot off the bench, because that was one of the problems they had. They had a lot of smart basketball players on that second unit, but it was like everybody could make plays for each other, but nobody could actually go out and do the thing. Nobody could go out and just actually get a shot up. And Highland, one of his big strengths is his ability to create shots off the dribble. He's extremely efficient. From what I hear, he's absolutely tearing it up in the open runs at Ball Arena. So that's promising. I think Big Najee has added size. They told him to focus on defensive versatility and to focus on his athleticism. He looked huge at Summer League, much bigger than he did at the start of last season. There's these small improvements. But mostly, look, this is going to look very much like the team it was to end last season until Murray gets back. It's going to be Nikola Jokic, and then you're hoping for Michael Porter Jr. to do what he did in the regular season, not the playoffs. Gordon to be more settled in, get a few contributions from Highland. Everyone stays healthy for once, and they're able to just get through until Murray gets back and then ride momentum into the playoffs.
How does a few contributions translate into minutes for Bones Highland coming from Michael Malone?
A lot of it's going to depend on what starts on September 27th when that's media day, and then after that's training camp. It's one thing to dominate in the open runs, or to do well in the open runs, rather. It's an entirely different thing. You have to bring the stuff that Malone wants in training camp. This is how RJ Hampton got minutes, was he busted himself with effort, intensity, toughness. He used his athleticism to do the little things. Highland's positive attitude is something that seems really infectious to everyone. His teammates really liked it at Summer League, but it gets a lot harder when you're actually in the NBA life and you're going up against veterans and coaches are going to be tough on you because you're a rookie. So that's going to be, I think, the kind of question. I think carving out about minutes, a lot of it's going to be how does the backcourt shape up? If they're solid with Rivers, Campazzo, and Morris, if they're able to just get through with those three plus Barton, then maybe you play more P.J. Dozier at three and you don't need Highland to play on the wing as much. But if you find yourself in a situation where it's like, look, the bench is just not scoring at all, Highland's probably an option that you can turn to maybe boost some of that a little bit. I also think Malone signaled consistently that this is going to be a season after the bubble and then a short off season and then last year's grueling season schedule. He's been very aware that he's going to need to peel back on some of the starters' minutes. So I think there will be a deeper rotation this season because he's worried about the cumulative effect, not of this season, but of the past two seasons that we went through in basically a year that have added up. All of that's going to be part of the equation, I think, for the Nuggets this season.
The Nuggets tip it off for real 36 nights from now. Matt Warr is the guy you want to follow to tape on touch with all of the rest of it. HP Basketball on Twitter, our Denver Nuggets insider, Matt Warr. Thanks for the time, my friend. Looking forward to talking to you a little bit more as we get this thing going close to tip-off, which is happening very, very rapidly.
Love talking to you guys. Miss you guys. Glad to be back on. Talk to you guys soon.
All right, thanks.
Thanks, Matt.
Matt Warr.